From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, a look at our recent forum for the 5 Republican and 6 Democratic candidates running in the primary election for the New Hanover County Board of Education. They're running for 4 seats in each party as we look ahead to the general election. The candidates joined us here at WHQR's studios in downtown Wilmington, along with our colleagues from WECT and Port City Daily, including WECT's John Evans, who was our MC for the evening. Candidates took questions from the press and the public, and on today's show, we're looking at some of their responses. Now, this is a primary, so it's not uncommon to see most of the candidates from each party share some common ground. Most Democratic candidates agreed with revisiting DEI policies and positions and shared concerns about the state's voucher program. Most Republicans agreed with concerns about parental involvement in classroom materials and, at the national level, with the dissolution of the U.S. Department of Education. And there's some things that all candidates agreed on. First and foremost, probably the district's need for adequate funding. All of the candidates, regardless of party, said they supported the proposed $320 million school bond, expected to appear on the ballot in November's general election. We'd encourage anyone who's really interested in this race to watch the full video of the forum, because there's a lot of questions we're not going to get to on today's show, where we're mainly going to focus on some of the interesting deviations from these general agreements and some other highlights from our forum. With me to help unpack all of that is my colleague, Rachel Keith. Rachel, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, so for the Republican primary for the New Hanover County School Board, we've got 5 candidates in alphabetical order. That's Josie Barnhart, a mathematics educator and incumbent board member. Pat Bradford, who has had a long career in journalism and publishing and is also an incumbent board member. Dr. Amy Dunning, an educator and newcomer to politics. Melissa Mason, an educator and incumbent board member. And Chris Sutton, a maintenance technician and longtime education advocate who unsuccessfully ran in the 2022 primary. All 5 of them did fill out our questionnaire, so you can find out more about where they stand on certain policies. We have that at whqr.org. But only 2 came to our candidates forum, and we wanted to give a little backstory on that.
Yes. So we originally said earlier in January, but then we realized that the budget town hall was that week. There were some NAACP listening sessions. So then we moved it to February 2nd, and that's when we had the fun snow. And so we had to reschedule. And yes, we had to do it on the first day of primary early voting day.
Yeah. And I know, like, this is always herding cats, and there are so many events that candidates are trying to get to. There was some debate over whether or not we should have rescheduled it. I think ultimately the fact that the entire county was shut down for like 2 days kind of indicated us that we made the right choice. But it did mean that only Melissa Mason and Chris Sutton came to our forum. So those are the 2 we're going to talk about. So we felt like we had to ask Melissa Mason about culture war issues, because that was a big part of her 2022 campaign.
Yes. And she mentioned when you asked her that yes, we still have to keep our eye on the ball with this, talking about book selection, that she agreed that there is a process for these books to go through and for parents and the community to challenge them. But she did say that some could fall through the cracks and that they had to be vigilant. She also, we asked her about, which is a big topic probably for the fall, is that the curriculum ban on stamped racism, anti-racism, and You by Ibram X. Kendi and Jason Reynolds. She said, yes, she still stands by that it was inappropriate. She said, when I followed the hearing for the book's removal initially, she was saying it, she took issue with the Lexile score. Her colleagues had issues with the ideological bent, as they say, of the book.
Right. And just for people who haven't heard the term, Lexile score is basically an indicator of the difficulty of a text, which might suggest, you know, what grade level or age it's appropriate for, but not a political or ideological issue.
You also asked her about how she felt going against the $3 million artificial intelligence program that Senator Michael Lee was bringing to our district.
Right. And this was a pilot program designed for a company called Evidin that was going to provide AI-powered surveillance equipment that could detect things like a crowd rushing or a fight happening or a weapon or stuff like that.
And we know from the reporting that she kind of fell out with the GOP on this vote.
I think that there hasn't been a lot of noise about it since. I think that once the decision was made, it was made, and we moved forward. As we look at what our district is currently using, we are using some of the services of Verkada, which was one of the companies that was part of the contract. I don't think it was a loss for us. I think that we have upgraded some of our cameras already, and I believe that we have amazing SROs and a great relationship with the SROs in our community that are helping out.
So the question was, you know, about this AI pilot that Senator Michael Lee had put forward, and there was a lot of tension on the board. It was clear that the GOP didn't have a set sense of whether or not they wanted to do this, and there was some, I'm just going to say it, nasty infighting that followed the vote. It really came down, just because of the numbers, to Mason's vote about whether or not this was going to go through. And I know that Josie Barnhart and Pat Bradford were publicly and privately upset with her. You know, you have to take Mason at their word that they are, you know, they've mended those fences, but it was an interesting rupture in the party.
Yeah, and the program got voted down because Republican David Perry joined her along with the two Democrats. So, yeah, she got flack for, you know, voting with them as well.
Yeah, and I certainly think David Perry will maybe face similar questions if he runs for re-election in 2 years. Another question we had for Mason was, as a Republican, what does she say to her fellow GOP people who are in office at the federal and state and county level, given that, you know, the schools are clearly in need of funding? The school board has unanimously said that they need more money to do the job that they're tasked with. But it feels like funding is getting reduced from the state, county, and federal level.
Yeah, we asked her this, and she said that, hey, we just need to keep going to the legislature and advocating, and we need to let them see. Some people would argue that they do see, but nonetheless, Melissa Mason said, we're going to continue to go to Raleigh with students, the people from the chamber, the GOP, the finance committee, students and staff. They all went to the legislature last year to ask for more funding. So she's basically advocating that they would do the same. It's a question of whether they will actually listen and do policies that would increase that funding.
Yeah, it's an interesting position for Republican school board members to be in, because you have to assume and give them credit for wanting the best for the school district, which means asking for the funding that they need and asking their GOP counterparts at the county and state level without criticizing them and stepping out of line for the party. So that's a tricky wicket. Speaking of that, we also asked candidates about the abolishment of the Department of Education at the federal level. And except for Chris Sutton, they were all sort of in favor of that. And Sutton was the one who said he had some reservations.
So first off, the United States Department of Education promised back in 1999 to fund 40% of special education. Right now we're getting between 13 and 18%. It's already failing us. Realistically, there's a significant amount of waste. Where my concern, and this is, I already got ate up in Republican circles over this because I didn't just say openly, Department of Education needs to go. No, you need to still figure some things out before you go that far. Office of Civil Rights. Look how many local problems we have had that were not resolved here locally. Whether it be the Spanish immersion program, the sexual assault cover-up, we had a significant amount of victims that did not get handled. They would not have received justice if it wouldn't have been for the Office of Civil Rights coming in.
So Chris Sutton did follow by saying, hey, maybe the state could be that watchdog if the federal government goes away and the Office of Civil Rights does, but he hasn't seen a plan to do that. And yes, Chris Sutton, in fact, Amy Dunning and Pat Bradford, Melissa Mason, and Josie Barnhart all are in favor of abolishing the U.S. Department of Education.
Yeah, and I think they've put forward, you know, some pretty standard party criticisms of the Department of Education, but what Sutton is talking about is an investigative body that's inside the Department of Education that for years was citing New Hanover County schools for, you know, violating Title IX and other issues. And that was a major part. And we'll have links on the page to some of the stories he's talking about. But as an advocate for some of those victims, Sutton has seen the role that the Office of Civil Rights played.
Yes, and he's standing by his value system, even though he thinks, he said it, it might cost some GOP voters potentially. But this is what he has seen, and he's seen the effectiveness of it, is what he's saying.
Yeah, I do want to touch on this issue a little bit, and that is both Melissa Mason and Chris Sutton have described themselves as being free-thinking Republicans who are willing to buck the party from time to time. You know, Mason put that in her questionnaire back in 2022, I think, and Sutton said it during our forum. And we can't say that the other candidates didn't show up because they didn't want to be on stage with them. But it does seem like there is a divide between Dunning, Bradford, and Barnhart, and then Sutton and Mason. And I don't want to make too much out of this, but we've seen some evidence, at least members of the, you know, conservative establishment aren't on board with Sutton and Mason. We saw Ty Turner's, which is a local nonprofit, endorsed the three candidates, not Sutton and Mason. They endorsed Barnhart, Bradford, and Dunning. And there was the GOP AI image debacle, where an image was released. This was it was an AI cartoon. You've seen these; they're everywhere. I hate them, but they are what they are. It was an AI cartoon image of members of the GOP. At a forum. So this is the...
At their GOP forum.
At their GOP forum for the school board. And there was one version that had all five candidates, and then there was another version that was circulated and then deleted that did not include Sutton. Make of that what you will. I've seen some people on the right say, hey, this was wrong. They shouldn't have done this. And so, you know, it remains to be seen how that will actually impact voter turnout or whether people are, you know, looking at the candidates or looking at the party for direction, but worth noting. Okay, moving on. Another issue from the past couple of years that is still hanging around is the termination of Dr. Charles Faust, who was the superintendent, butted heads with the board members, actually board members of both parties from time to time. And at a certain point, you know, there was the winds were not blowing in his favor. It looked like his contract was not going to get renewed, and then it did.
Yes, and then it did. And when I followed it, it was mainly these test scores had come out, and the growth scores were a lot better, showing recovery from post-COVID learning loss. So that was celebrated, and I think most people were on board. Melissa Mason, though, she was the lone dissenting vote against his contract extension. And Dr. Faust later, I mean, he started becoming more vocal about what he thought about some board policies, which some see as getting him into hot water with that board, and there's just no going back.
Yeah, and it's worth remembering that eventually, about a year later, Faust would be fired. I mean, his contract was terminated immediately, and they had to pay him out. But at the time, the chairman of the New Hanover County GOP, Nevin Carr, wrote a letter excoriating Republicans for renewing Faust's contract. Pat Bradford went on a now-deleted podcast that the GOP hosted, calling this a gut punch. She obviously took it very seriously. You know, I think she was hurt by the criticism. Her argument at the time, as we reported on, was that given the job market at the time, firing Faust, or effectively firing Faust and not renewing his contract, would mean that not only would he leave, but he might take some of his top admins with him, and that could basically create administrative chaos.
Yeah, and there have been a lot of openings across the state, and that was another point she was making.
So it remains to be seen, you know, whether or not people remember that. They're still upset about that. Obviously, you know, people who follow this stuff really closely are still posting about it, whether the general, you know, Republican and right-leaning unaffiliated folks are still concerned about that. We will see. One other issue was we asked Chris Sutton about First Amendment issues. He's been very, very outspoken on this, in part because recently he was cut off at the call to audience.
Yes. So there is a policy that says, hey, if you're coming to the public call, let's refrain from harassing or putting derogatory comments in your speech. It says that you could direct your comments to a particular board member, and that's what he was doing. He was trying to do that to Dr. Tim Merrick, and he was basically gaveled down that he cannot do that. And Pete Wildebohr ruled that, yes, stop your speech. But then Chris Sutton asked the lawyer, Norwood Blanchard, hey, what do you think about this? And he said, I think you could proceed if you're just critiquing him on his policy decision and not doing a character assassination. And Cabarrus County, their commissioners, I mean, they got into a lawsuit because someone was naming names at the public comment period. They were taken out of the meeting. And then he sued this person, and they had to settle with him because the courts were in favor of that public speech.
Yeah, and Norwood Blanchard and I have had some good conversations about this, and I think he does know his stuff on that. And I will say this seemed to be part of Sutton's overall philosophy about how he sees conservatism. He thinks free speech is an important part of that. We've obviously seen the terrain of who supports free speech and when shift pretty rapidly over the last couple of years.
Depending on the partisan type of speech, who gets to talk.
Exactly, yeah. But I will say, to his credit, I heard this from a couple people who were right there at the forum, that he applied this to his thoughts on book bans and book challenges, too. He said, you know, when it came to Stamped, for example, he would have maybe preferred there be a corollary book, maybe something that gave a conservative point of view alongside Stamped instead of just removing Stamped. And so food for thought, not everyone on the Democratic Party or Republican Party agrees on free speech or how it should be applied. But if that's a thing for you, Sutton was very emphatic about that. All right. Well, we need to take a quick break, but we will be right back with more from our candidates forum. This is for the primary election for the New Hanover County School Board. Up next, we're going to take a look at the Democratic candidates with my colleague Rachel Keith. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. We return now to our candidates forum for those running in the primary for the New Hanover County Board of Education race. I'm here with my colleague, Rachel Keith. Rachel, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have six candidates running as Democrats in the primary for the New Hanover County School Board. In this segment, we're going to hear from three. Nelson Bollier, he's an instructor of history and political science, who served from 2018 to 2022 and then unsuccessfully ran for re-election. Margie Gewurztman, an acupuncturist, who says she's mainly just advocating for her children, and she's also a newcomer to politics. And Jerry Jones Jr., an environmental chemist and small business owner who lost a close race in 2024 for school board by just a few hundred votes. All right, first up is Nelson Bollier.
Yes, I pulled a clip, and again, you can watch the full primary forums online, but I pulled a clip from his closing statement about why he wanted to run again. He was on the board from 2018 to 2022. He's trying his hand again at a seat.
And yeah, it was a tough campaign in 2022 for Bollier. He just barely made it through the primary election. After a couple of recounts, including a full hand-to-eye recount across the county where he came out ahead by just two votes. And then in the general election, Bollier did place last out of eight candidates, four Republicans and four Democrats. But it's worth noting that whole pack was relatively close, with only 1.5 percentage points separating top vote-getter Republican Pat Bradford and Bollier. So I think Bollier still feels like there's gas in the tank there. And this is from his, as you said, this is from his closing statement where he was talking about his past experience.
When I was on the Board of Education in my first term, we created a Title IX committee, an equity committee. We redistricted. We created a strategic plan. We hired a new superintendent. And we did all of this while uncovering up years of inaction over disgusting sexual abuse and while dealing with COVID. I came back into this because there is no focus on this board. You know what we never did? We never passed a resolution in support of Black History Month. Do you know why? Because we never had a president post racist and disgusting memes on his social media feed. That is necessary today because this board doesn't have focus.
So you can see that the local is connected to the national, and when we cover politics here locally, Ben, that is part of the conversation. We'll hear national talking points at the local level, and that's what he is running on. He's addressing a national issue, and we know that, yes, the board did vote down recognition of Black History Month, and yes, that was shortly after President Donald Trump posted a racist video of the Obamas.
Yeah, and you know, I suppose the steel man argument for the Republicans on the board was that they felt like this was a political stunt by Democrat Tim Merrick, But on the other hand, it struck a lot of people as an odd hill to die on. And I will also say, all politics is local. And in 2022, we saw a lot of conservative candidates running against the quote-unquote woke policies of the Biden administration, even though he was the president of the United States, and this is a local school board race. You can't get away from it, and we're always going to see that for both parties.
Yes, and again, that was about this Black History resolution that Tim Merrick, like you said, brought forward, and we'll hear from other Democratic candidates on that. And he said in his opening that he's running again because he doesn't care what's on a teacher's or a student's desk. And yes, there was a controversial policy passed. It's called the classroom display policy. And originally it banned student art and it banned family photos, but they amended that to allow those. But yes, they can only have specific types of flags. Technically, you're not supposed to have any type of international flags unless you can make an argument that it's part of the curriculum. And so basically what Nelson is saying is that that's one of the reasons why he came back into the fold, because he thought that was an egregious policy that they passed. But they think it's totally reasonable and keeping activism out of schools.
Yeah, and again, a lot of those the actual policy language is pretty pretty dry and generic. But behind the scenes, there was a lot of concern about pro-Palestinian imagery or LGBTQ imagery. And that actually came to a head in some issues that you've covered. But, you know, the policy presents itself as neutral, but it definitely came from pushback against left-leaning activism.
Yes, and when this was unveiled originally, I mean, Pat Bradford referenced what was happening at UNC Chapel Hill with the protests, pro-Palestinian protests. And so it was a direct reason she cited for not having, for passing this policy right now. I mean, it was an emergency is what she said.
Yeah, there's no issue you can't make local. And one more note about Nelson Beaulieu is that we have heard some pushback from education advocates who feel like he did not go far enough with things like a Title IX survey and other efforts to investigate abuse and other wrongdoing in the school district. So he is running on that, but we've heard some pushback actually from the left that maybe they had hoped that he would have done more. In any case, moving on now to our next candidate, Margie Gewertzman. We were asking candidates about whether or not they supported reintegrating the schools based on reporting from the Star News and here at WHQR and other outlets. The schools have become de facto segregated, again, with large concentrations of minority and low-income students at certain schools. And you've done tons of reporting on why this is a potentially negative thing. But we are asking candidates, would they be in favor of basically redistricting? This has been a lightning rod issue in the past. And this was her response, which she, you know, prefaced by saying that she was coming from a very diverse background, Chinese and white ancestry, and she had converted to Judaism. She said she did fully support diversity.
What I've heard here in Wilmington is during the civil rights movement and the desegregation of schools, they shut down Williston just so they can say they integrated. That's devastating. Who did that serve? Who did that serve? So when we decide we want to redistrict, we got to be real clear. Who is this for? Is this for the school, or is this a badge on our chest? So be real clear. Be real clear about what we do, because it better serve the community, because they're the ones that are going to have to deal with, hey, now I have to drive an hour to get to my kid's lunch. I have to drive an hour to get to my kid's IEP meeting.
So usually bleeping out an F-bomb during candidates forum is not something we have to worry about.
We got
to watch WECT scramble around to figure out what to
do
about
that.
Look, I'm not going to clutch my pearls at the use of adult language. I use plenty of it.
Me too. Yeah.
But I was curious why this was such an emotional reaction, and I figured if we were going to drill down on it, I should reach out to Gewertzman. So I did. I sent her an email, and she responded, and we had a little bit of a back and forth. And she explained a little bit that just, the historical injustice that she's talking about, which is the Williston School, really, really resonated with her and really just got her emotional. So I want to say a couple of things about what's going on here in her response. One is she's referring to Williston High School, which was an all-black high school during the age of school segregation here in New Hanover County, known as the greatest school under the sun, as a cherished and successful part of the black community with students who were thriving and teachers and staff who were engaged. And when, at the order of the Supreme Court, the schools were integrated, Williston was shut down. And for many members of the black community, that felt like retribution, almost like the white establishment was saying, you want integration, here's integration. And so that's the historical tragedy that Gwertzman is referring to. Now, today, we do have schools that have a majority black population. We also have schools where low-income students, regardless of race, are concentrated. So both economic and racial segregation. But we don't have a real analog to Williston. There isn't a school that has the role in the black community now that Williston had then. So I don't really think that's a fair apples-to-apples comparison. And again, we're not talking about closing down any schools, really. We're talking about moving students around so that they're more demographically equitable from school to school. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, profanity aside, Gwertzman told me what she meant by the badge on the chest was that she didn't want the district to do something just for political points or because it was an in vogue thing to do. She wanted it to be very intentional. And the last thing I'll say is that, you know, talking about the long distance and traveling to, you know, get to students for IEPs or whatever reason echoes something she said at the Democratic Party forum for candidates. That was the night before this forum, where she said something similar. She was talking about, you know, kids being stuck on the bus for long journeys on the way to and from school. And that is something we have heard many, many, many times. And it is, you know, one of the political consequences of redistricting is that you will hear back from parents who are upset about, you know, the additional burden on their students. Now, some people think that's a good bargain for reducing segregation in schools. But obviously, there will always be parents who are upset.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting. I mean, both sides talk about this virtue signaling. Are we doing this because we want to make a change, or are we doing this because we want to score political points? We hear that on both sides of the aisle pretty often. So this is in our public discourse. I will say, though, I've talked to UNC and NC State researchers, educational researchers, about, I mean, I have heard the research shows that when schools are demographically similar to one another, that they do better. But yes, we do have concerns. Some people don't want to leave their neighborhoods. They don't want to go across town. We understand that. But they said you either do that or you're going to have to pay a lot to raise up the schools that are high minority, high poverty schools. So you kind of have a choice to make. And Cropper GIS, they are the company that does the analysis of how the district can redistrict. And that also came out of Matthew Cropper's mouth, was that, hey, you really should work on this, making schools look more demographically similar to one another. It's easier for resources and building schools at capacity, because we know that some schools are way over capacity, some are under. And so that's an issue that they have to consider. And it's a hard one because it's a very political issue.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have seen candidates from both parties struggle with this in the past. I had one former candidate tell me, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because
yeah.
If you
need, it's tough.
If you need to raise more money, you know, that means higher taxes and people don't like that. And if you go with redistricting, that means taking kids out of the neighborhood, and there's always going to be parents who don't like that.
So correct.
It's tough. Moving on to Jerry Jones. We brought the conversation around to equity and the DEI committees and positions and policies that were removed over the last couple of years. And he cited some journalism out of the Coastal Journalism Hub that you talked about recently.
Yes, there is down to the census tract in New Hanover County. They have found that, mainly through the investigation of Cape Fear Collective, that there's a 17-year life expectancy gap. And so the point that Jerry Jones was making is that these are our students coming from these different types of neighborhoods. And think about the vast difference in their needs, because a lot of times when we look at this 17-year gap, it's access to health insurance, it's access to healthy food, it's access to transportation.
Right. So you see that in some neighborhoods, people are living 17 years longer than people that are born and raised in another neighborhood that could be a mile and a half apart from one another, right? So I think that it was short-sighted on the part of the board to eliminate the DEI community because, or the DEI committees, because that removed a different critical lens for looking at a data set, right? So you don't look at that data set, and with that critical lens, you don't see the disparities where groups of students who could be side by side with one another are performing at vastly different levels, but the average looks okay. So the very first thing that I would do is bring back a critical lens so that we can actually tease out the individual stories that are happening with groups of students, because they are happening.
And I will say this will be an issue where it lines up pretty neatly along the party lines. So we have the Democratic candidates, and we'll discuss this in the fall, where they are supportive of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. And then the Republicans are against this, they say. And so this is an issue that we're going to tackle in the fall, and the voters should know where people stand on these issues.
Yeah. I will say a quick shout out to Jerry Jones. During the Democratic Party forum, I had asked all the candidates how they would work across the aisle with Republicans, given the likelihood that Republicans may control the county commission and the state legislature and Congress and the White House. So many of the candidates, you know, gave very thoughtful answers about, you know, how they would try to find common ground. And Jerry Jones says, "Ben, I love you, but I reject the premise of the question." And basically said, "No, I'm not going to work with people who won't work with me in good faith, and that, you know, if I can't get what I need from the powers that be, then I'll spend the next 2 years organizing and trying to change things through voting."
Yeah, that's what he referenced as well at our primary forum. "I'm going to help families organize, especially working families," is what he said.
So obviously, I never love it when a candidate just totally avoids the question. I don't feel like that's what Jones was doing here. I felt like he kind of pivoted and gave the answer that he wanted to give. And so I always appreciate when candidates can think on their feet and take our questions and go somewhere interesting with them.
Right.
All right. Well, we need to take one more quick break, but we'll be back with my colleague Rachel Keith in just a moment to hear from the other three Democratic candidates running in the primary election for New Hanover County School Board. I'm Ben Shockman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for staying with us. We return now to our candidates forum for those running in the primary election for the New Hanover County School Board. I'm here with my colleague Rachel Keith. Rachel, thanks for sticking around.
Thank you.
All right. Well, in this last but not least segment, we're going to round out the Democratic slate and hear from the other three candidates. That's Wendy Dale, a paralegal and technology contracts specialist; Brittany LaRue, a financial professional; and Rick Sutherland, an educator. All three are newcomers to politics. First up is Wendy Dale.
Yes, the biggest question to face the school board, one of them, is funding. And where's it coming from? Because hopefully listeners know that the school board cannot raise their own funds. They look to the county commission. They look to the state. They look to the federal government. Yes, they do have some small enterprise funds. I mean, they do get a lot of the cafeteria. School nutrition is self-sustaining, is an example. But yes, these school board members have to rely on others for their budget. And so I put the question to Wendy Dale, how do you see who needs to give more? Because we're all in agreement that we need more. So who's going to be paying for the additional funds?
I would advocate for increased funding from any source that I could get it from. As far as the percentages, I think the state and federal, you know, have the most money. They should be providing the most funds. I realize, you know, they also have greater responsibilities. But certainly, you know, we don't live in a poor country. We certainly don't live in a poor state. And I think they can be doing a lot more than what they're doing. As far as the county, I mean, I'm very hopeful. I mean, we have the endowment, which is an amazing resource.
Yes, we always have the endowment
yes.
that could pick up. We'll see what happens with that. I mean, yes, they do support the early learning facilitators, which is a lot of money. They did give some for additional staffing in some of the schools that need it the most. And yes, I did put it to Wendy Dale. The state provides, with the total budget, about 54%. The federal is close to 9%. The county is 31%, and other is close to 7%. That's grants, donations, fines, and forfeitures. If people skip out on bonds on their cars, we get the school system gets that money, capital, community use. So they really have to think about, where is the additional money coming from and who are they going to ask that of? So I wanted these candidates to tell the public how they're going to do this.
Yeah, and I will say, we've both covered the school board for almost a decade.
Yes.
And, you know, we have seen Democratic and Republican-led boards of commissioners rightly talk about how much additional funding they put into the school system that they are not required by statute to do. By statute, they have to, you know, provide funding for facilities, capital needs.
The county.
The county, yeah. And they go in above and beyond, and they're usually in the top 10 or 15 counties. I mean, these things always change because every county is constantly adjusting its ratio, and there's a lot of moving parts. But, you know, they're consistently in the upper echelon of counties that provide support. But that can make it difficult when the school district essentially, like Oliver Twist, comes back and asks for more.
Yes.
So that is always going to be tough, and that's going to be the case whether it's an all-Democratic board or an all-Republican board or some mix of the two.
Yes, and Dr. Christopher Barnes, the superintendent, is constantly saying, I mean, I know this all the time because he's always saying it, is that the allotment ratio has not changed in a decade from the state legislature.
And this is how the state of North Carolina decides the funding per pupil or how many positions per student
yes.
goes to a specific district.
Yes. And actually, Margie Gewertzman picked up on this. She even picked up on the stat. Oh my gosh, she said in her words that the assistant principal allotment is one assistant principal for every 985 students. So, I mean, Christopher Barnes is giving the public understanding of how this actually works. And so they're basically advocating that this is not enough, even though the state legislature or people who work there think it's enough or we're giving above and beyond, you should be happy. They're still just saying, and I've been following the school system like we talked about for a very long time, I hear a lot of talk around scarcity. We don't have enough. We don't have enough people. We have to share positions. I just heard from a Snipes teacher who was saying we have a split social worker. I mean, they're just not seeing. They have to share art teachers and music teachers. That's not the world that they want to live in. They want to live in a well-resourced school is what they're saying.
And we heard from probably, I think all of the Democratic candidates have reiterated, once again, North Carolina has been ranked very low against the other 50 states in terms of per student funding. There's lots of different ways to calculate that, but there's no way in which North Carolina is in the top 10.
So, yes, and teacher pay as well. So that goes into this.
All right, moving on to Brittany LaRue. She, when I first talked to her, said like her first order of business was going to be going out into the community and doing listening sessions.
Yeah, and credit when credit's due, she talked about she had 4 public listening sessions where over 60 people attended. And so one of our colleagues asked her when we were at the forum, our media colleagues, how did those go and what did you hear? And this is what she said.
So I think I would want to be more cognizant of individual schools because they have like their own ecosystems. And I actually think, regardless of party lines, honestly, that there's a lot of things that people are saying that we agree a lot more than we think. Like when I talk to people in the schools, it really doesn't matter. We're talking about kids and what needs that we have. And I thought that was interesting because when I go to school board meetings, it does feel quite a bit more political. So that was interesting. That was one of the biggest takeaways that I had.
So she's talking about people are really worried about funding and their salaries and do we have enough bus drivers? And yes, I've been covering the school board since 2020. There have been lots of highly politicized fights. And it's interesting because both parties are saying from Democrats and Republicans to each other, stop the activism.
Yeah, and this is something I hear consistently when I'm out in the public, and I'm talking to voters, not politicians, is that, yeah, they are concerned with learning loss and school facilities and classroom sizes and bus routes. I mean, gosh, go up to Pender. And I know that's not the race we're talking about right now, and Pender's pretty consistently ruby red But, you know, there are plenty of cultural war issues there, even between conservatives. And when you really drill down to voters, I mean, are those things really motivating, or do they care about, you know, logistics, facility quality, student classroom size, stuff like that? And we've talked in the newsroom a lot about whether or not this is a bellwether for a shift towards more practical issues being the center of debates in school board as opposed to the cultural war stuff. But at the same time, I don't think we have proof yet. You know, I don't know if those practical day-to-day issues are what motivate people to go to the polls. It's what they talk about when you stop them on the street, but I think the election, probably even the general election, will bear out what are people willing to go to the polls for.
That's interesting. I mean, because obviously the fights over books and the fights over Pride Month, I mean, I've seen public demonstrations against these, and it brings people out. And yeah, is this what people care about? It's probably a yes and issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say one person pointed out to me when I was talking about, you know, just how jam-packed those school board meetings are. And they said, yeah, there might be 200 people there, but 60,000 people vote.
Yes.
So, all right. So our last Democratic candidate in the primary is Rick Sutherland.
Yes. He got a question about the board recently voted down. We talked about this, the Black History Month resolution that the NAACP chapter came out against and said we don't appreciate this. So did the New Hanover County Association of Educators. Again, the Republicans who voted this down said that this was performative and they do support Black history. But we did put this to Rick Sutherland, and this is what he had to say.
And the racial struggles we've endured in this country, it's important to note that, you know, we're dealing with public schools, so it's really kind of our obligation, it is our obligation to ensure that every child is honored, is valued, that they do understand their histories, that they do understand the history of the community that we live in, not just the good parts, but all parts, so that we can learn from them and become better versions of ourselves. And so this is very important, and it sends a horrible message to the community by not supporting it, that folks are going to likely create policy that is exclusive and not inclusive.
So one thing I think came out of this forum, obviously, it's not a huge surprise the Democratic candidates were in favor of DEI, in favor of talking and thinking about, you know, issues of gender and race. And we've seen a lot of pushback against that kind of stuff by conservative and Republican candidates over the last couple of years. But the way that the pushback has been framed has changed. Again, you go back to 2022 and look at some of the candidates. People were very open about being opposed to, quote unquote, woke policies. These were bad. They were Looney Tunes. It was nonsense from the Biden administration on down. And, you know, whether you agree or disagree with that, it was obviously very successful because Republicans swept the school board election in 2022. Flash forward a number of years, both because those people are now in power and have to be a little bit more careful about criticizing the institution they're in charge of, and because the overall tone seems to have changed a little bit. We have seen different arguments for pushbacks against DEI and, again, quote-unquote woke stuff. Take, for example, Melissa Mason, who cited the Lexile score of Stamped as opposed to what she might have said 3 years ago, which was that it was, you know, woke indoctrination. We've seen a lot of people over the last year point to the Trump administration as being the main reason. So instead of, you know, opposing left-leaning policies or, you know, getting into the weeds when it comes to gender theory or anything like that, they're just saying, well, the Trump administration has banned this stuff or is trying to ban this stuff. And this is now a legal compliance issue. So sort of sidestepping the culture war and just saying, hey, as good stewards of a public institution, we can't be on the wrong side of a law, no matter what the law is. But I think it's worth noting on our way out here that at least one significant part of that has changed, or at least the ground has shifted a little bit.
They changed a lot of policies based on this Dear Colleague letter.
And so for people who didn't catch that, what was the Dear Colleague letter?
It was basically a directive from the Trump administration executive order that says to cull all of the references to DEI and any type of instruction that praises this or teaches this.
Like throughout the educational system.
Throughout the educational system. And we did at New Hanover County Schools have some policies when these words individually or together were in some of these policies. And so they were going through and pulling them all out.
Like the equity pillar.
That's correct. That is just all but disappeared. That used to be part of the strategic plan. This new board has dropped that. Yes, and so the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, they just won basically a court case just recently that basically that this challenge guidance is no longer in effect and cannot be enforced against anyone, anywhere, nationwide. So that was, you can say these types of things, you can have these types of values. So we'll see if they appeal or the school board responds, because they responded pretty quickly to the Trump administration's executive order. How do they respond to this?
Yeah, I suppose the question would be, do they want to keep the status quo until the Trump administration has exhausted its appeals? Do they want to switch back, as you pointed out, as quickly as they switched the first time? Anytime the president is, you know, making policy by executive order, it is very unstable and fluid, because the courts can immediately, and often do, immediately jump on it. So I think that'll be an issue in the general, too, when candidates may not be able to just say, oh, this is a legal compliance issue. And at that point, do they want to go back to their original 2022 style arguments or not? But for now, that's just about all the time we have for this edition of The Newsroom. I do want to remind you, again, if you're interested, if you really want to get into the details here, we encourage you to watch the entire forum. We'll have links to that video on the show page, and also to the questionnaires from all 5 Republican and 6 Democratic candidates. Get a little bit more into the details of where they stand on the issues. And a shout out to you, Rachel, because you, I know, put a lot of work into getting those questionnaires together and helping us put together the questions for these candidates forums. So thank you for all your work there. And thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
All right, well, that's it for this edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to my colleagues at WHQR, WECT, and Port City Daily, who made this and our other forums possible. And a special thanks to Ken Campbell and George Scheibner for technical support, getting all the apparatus set up for those forums. And thanks, of course, to Rachel Keith for joining me today, and to all of our candidates for the Democratic Party: Nelson Bollier, Wendy Dale, Margie Gewurztman, Jerry Jones Jr., Brittany LaRue, and Rick Sutherland. And from the Republican Party: Josie Barnhart, Pat Bradford, Dr. Amy Dunning, Melissa Mason, and Chris Sutton. Thanks to those of you who made it to our forum, and thanks to all of you for filling out the candidate questionnaires and helping voters make educated decisions this primary season. If you'll indulge me in a little editorializing here on the way out, I think it's worth saying that no matter what you think of any particular individual candidate, you have to acknowledge that this is a tough business. As my colleague John Evans at WECT says at all of our forums, anyone can complain, anyone can kick rocks or send in anonymous emails, but it takes real guts to sign your name on the dotted line and run for office, especially if it's your first time, but really any time. And so, as voters, the least we could do is get involved, in particular for local races, where not only do you have the most say in the outcome, but also where the decisions will impact your life most often on a day-to-day basis. The candidates have done their part. Now it's up to us. So, if you have not taken advantage of early voting, hopefully you're headed to the polls on primary election day, which is March 3rd. We'd love to see some better civic engagement than perhaps we've seen in past years. In 2024, just 22.5% of the population showed up, and that was with a presidential primary. The last non-presidential primary year, turnout was less than 18%. And I know we can do better than that. So, as a reminder, if you're a registered Democrat, you can vote in Democratic primaries. If you're a registered Republican, you can vote in the GOP primaries. And if you're an unaffiliated voter like me, you can have your choice voting in either the Republican or the Democratic primaries, but not both. So choose wisely. Remember, you need a photo ID to vote, and you'll want to go to your polling station. We'll have a link on the page so you can check to make sure you've got the right spot. And we hope to see you out there. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.